But I can picture the.
I have regular, but I had food poisoning like about a week and a half, almost 2 weeks ago.
No shit, full on vomiting and puking, or
just
pooping.
Just my
straight pooping.
Stomach and
home cooking or dining out.
No, I went out.
Turn off the recording. Home cooking.
Like, it was the liquids. The liquid poops.
That'll put the fear of God into me. I won't go to that restaurant for a while. If I throw up at a place, I won't go there for years, which is often.
Oh, yeah. I threw up walking out of the Saddleback, the one at the block. Haven't been back since.
Oh, shit. Walking out? Nope.
Yeah.
Damn.
Like I walked out and I walked right immediately to a planter.
No. You had to ruin it for me.
Did I tell you guys my brunch buffet story? We used to go to Acapulco's brunch buffet a lot back in the day because it was a lot of food and it was relatively cheap cost, you know, price-wise. Anyway.
I've been to that brunch. It was very good.
It was really good. They had these little strawberry parfait things. And, like, I'm like, I ate one. I'm like, oh, that's really good. So I went back and grabbed two because it's a buffet, right? So I'm, like, eating two. And then, like, oh, you like them? So I was with quite a few people. So everyone brought me back two. So I was sitting there with, like, 15 in front of me. I'm like, all right. And this was after, you know, full brunch buffet.
Yeah.
And I'm... Oh, guys, we got to go.
Oh.
And, like, I was eyeing, like, a planner right outside of the restaurant. And, like, I got to the planner. No. Because I, like, glanced over at everyone still eating. I was like, no, don't do this to them. Okay. I'm like, all right. Trash can at the end of the... I, like, got to that. Don't
be Tracy,
like,
Morgan at the game.
I'm like, no. Oh, God. Like, the whole drive home, I was like, Dave, you might have to pull over. Yeah, but I made it. I ended up not. I was just imagining just pure parfait back out.
Hey guys. Welcome to the Hype Attack Podcast,
where we weigh in on the latest in nerd and pop culture hype.
We are the head.
We're the excited conversation we all have with our friends
about the nerdy things we love
and geek about.
We are the Hype Attack.
I am the hype!
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Hype Attack Podcast, where we weigh in on the latest nerd and pop culture hype. Your boy, Jermaine, and with me, as always, Doug.
Clink.
Isaac.
Hey.
And Rudy.
Hey.
On today's episode,
I'm gonna do that next time. Sorry.
On today's episode, we're gonna discuss the Electric State.
Mm.
There was a specific review comment, you know, that was that was put out into the world that said Netflix blockbuster might actually be harmful to movies. That was really the thing that made us really go. Say, we have to watch this movie because can it really be that bad? Can it?
I mean, just looking at the visuals, man, like, it was really well done, mm-hmm. I think, as from a visual perspective. But I don't know if we want to, like, we're jumping into it.
Jump into it. Dive in.
That movie was so damn just, like...
Trash.
It wasn't... I don't want to fully say it was boring, but it was so flat. The whole story was paint by numbers.
Like, yep.
It's like this, you had the cast with a bunch of names I hadn't even realized were the voices until the credits rolled.
Dude, a huge cast. I got it all here.
And then, but they spent the money on the cast, spent the money on the visuals, and they just didn't spend money on the story.
The budget was $320 million for a streaming movie.
Reportedly.
Yeah.
I talked to some people. It's $320
million. Oh, okay.
Cool. Which
confirmed
is...
here?
Which is insane, and that's what makes this, like, sting that much more, because Netflix constantly increases their rates to us, the consumer, and then you see something like this, and it's like, is this why? Because you want to spend $320 million on a piece of shit. So Jermaine brought up that headline that got our attention, and so I wanted to avoid reviews before really watching it, but then later I went and pulled up more headlines, and it's just, you know, like, Netflix... The Electric State is a $320 million piece of junk. Netflix, The Electric State proves Hollywood is broken. Like, some of these headlines.
Which we'll dissect that one later.
like some of these headlines, I don't know if I've ever seen something so harsh.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still going back and forth on whether or not it's justified to be that harsh. But I understand where they're coming from a little bit.
It's a they're harsh because it's a forgettable movie.
Mm-hmm.
Fair. I will tell you this.
Fair.
I probably won't ever watch it again.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason why I watched it because we decided to talk about it on this podcast. Like I had zero interest in watching it.
Even that headline was saying that how trashy it was didn't pique your interest a little bit.
No. Because I'm at that point now in my life, like where I want to watch great, you know, good, solid movies. Like it's hard for me to watch a movie like this and come out of it with nothing because it was, you know, like nothing in the movie kind of like grabbed me, kind of like really made me care about it. And it felt like homework, like I was watching the movie.
I do have to agree with you too.
Homework, because we were going to talk about it, you know, but granted going in, you know, I hope it wasn't, you know,
you hope you're not wasting your time.
Yeah. Like an atrocity of a movie.
Atrocity.
So as far as something being, you know, people saying that it's, you know, trash and it's garbage and an atrocity and terrible. I live in the realm that happens to see bad movies. I don't intentionally go see bad movies, but I'm like, all right, well, it's kind of in my wheelhouse. And it allows me to go like, well, it makes that, you know, good movie even better, right? Like Craven, Madam Web, Megalopolis, like those fucking movies.
Well, I think we had talked personally about that interview with Alan Moore of Watchmen fame. And what else did he do? Like The Killing Joke, comic book writer, Alan Moore. Mm-hmm. He had said something like, you know, if you want to be a better writer, not only should you read the good books, you should read the bad books, mm-hmm. the horrible books, so you can learn from them. And so, like, I think all those examples you just said, and this one especially, I would say, is going to be homework in film schools.
But no, and
that's something to learn from.
Honestly, and rightfully so.
Yeah,
because it was so familiar. It was paint by numbers. It was basically the movie AI plus combined with iRobot, combined with Ready Player One, and that Bruce Willis one, Surrogates. Like it was all of that. It was all this familiar stuff, and remember all these things. Just very, what's the word you like to use? The F word? Formulaic.
Fuck. Oh, fuck. Yeah.
So it was exactly that. But to say like it was garbage, like it did have an impressive cast, and other than Chris Pratt and Giancarlo Esposito getting hired for exactly what they get hired to do. Which is Chris Pratt being Star-Lord and Giancarlo being like the hard-ass killer kind of thing, right? The butcher of Schenectady. Other than that, everyone else like held their weight. Everyone else was good. Still a lot of people, which is probably why it was that budget, that really, really high budget. And it was boring. It was 2 hours and something minutes. And it was like way too fucking long.
Yeah, I saw that runtime and I was like, ooh.
And they could, there's like little things. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, you could have made it punchier or rearranged some stuff. But it wasn't like, whoa, what a absolute unsavable dumpster fire. You know?
Do you guys think because of the money, because of the cast, that's why these reviews are so
absolutely
are so harsh?
I think so.
Yeah,
I would say so.
It's interesting. So I'm looking at the Rotten Tomato scores right now, and we are looking at a 15% from the critics and a 73% from the audience. And so, yes, to answer your point, I think the critics are giving it probably less than maybe what it should have been because of the cast. And I have to question if the audience score is that much higher because it was just a streaming movie. If that audience had to go to the movie theaters and pay for it, you know, and if people dropped potentially $25 for an IMAX viewing or a Dolby, because you know they would have released it in those formats.
Uh-huh.
Do you think some of that, though, might be just like these critics don't know what the hell they're talking about and just kind of an overcorrection of that?
Maybe. I don't. Well, so what I found happening to myself while watching the movie, because it is so generic and flat.
Generic, that's.
I started pulling my phone out.
Mm-hmm.
And I told myself to stop because I wanted to be able to watch it for the show. Though. But I realized that, like,
see, honestly, torturously without my phone.
No, no, I stopped myself. But every once in a while, I'd have my phone out, and I realized like during those moments, the movie almost felt fine because it is such a formulaic, generic thing that it's in the background. So I'm almost wondering, is that audience score so high because people are watching it with their phones and watching it bullshit, and they turn around and it's like, yeah, it was a good movie. Like, there was good special effects. These actors I like. It wasn't, you know, when I think about a horror movie, or atrocity movie, or something like that. I haven't seen it yet, but The Room, or you look at Sony's Villains movie, again, movies I haven't seen, but I've heard about how they had to redub the audio and their scenes where it wasn't in Madam Web, right? You can see mouths moving, but no sounds coming out, or you could see no mouth moving and sound is coming out.
Like, yeah, very foreign film.
That's horrible. Yeah. This movie had no horribleness to it as far as production value goes. Mm-hmm. It looked amazing.
Looked really, really fucking good. The shots were good.
Yeah. The color grading, the special effects were absolutely amazing. Top those robots notch. Looked so good.
Yes, I love the robots.
So there's nothing... There's nothing bad.
Fuck those robots.
There's nothing bad about the movie making process. Mm. It was purely on the storytelling that just sucked.
So
giant, huge mecha balls.
So
I want that on a shirt now.
While I was watching this movie, let's break down the plot a little bit. So you have a genius level, you know, kid who's a, you know, brother to Millie Bobby Brown's, you know, character. And there's a robot war between humans and robots. And there's a treaty that, you know, after the war, there's a treaty that's being signed. But you find out that the treaty was a thing that was orchestrated because of they technically kidnapped the brother, right?
Yeah.
Used his brain synapses, you know, whatever, to create this kind of like augmented kind of reality where you can have work and play like both at the same time, mm-hmm. you know, where
people which they never explore the play part of
it. Yeah. Where people were living in these, you know, kind of like these virtual, like head kind of pods, you know, and they can use, you know, robots to go do things and whatnot. So she finds out that her brother is still alive. So she's on this journey, you know,
her quest
to go find her brother. And she runs into, you know, Chris Pratt's character. And you find out that he's working with a robot because he's kind of like a smuggler. So this little ragtag team, you know,
sounds familiar.
They go try to rescue her brother from this, of course, evil corporation that's using, you know, the brother, you know, to you find out that he's linked to this thing and he's running the whole program. But I get the overall message, which they give you at the end, you know, they want you to disconnect, you know, like be in the real world, enjoy life with your friends and family, you know, pretty much don't live in this kind of oasis of a reality that they created. So that was the message that was at the end of the movie, which I get that, but the execution of the movie, no.
Yeah.
I didn't really care for it. Honestly, I didn't really care too much for the robots, the design, because when they said that it was a war between humans and robots with these kind of specific robots, I was like, they're like cutesy little, you know,
robots. But it like got to the point where these robots were actually, you know, backing humanity into a corner before the breakthrough. And then they came back with, you know, they're stronger robots. So it was kind of,
which I get that,
kind of unbelievable though for these cutesy robots to be.
Hey, if that Penny Pal, the postman girl, came up to you and she'll punch a fucking hole right through you. In her defense,
I mean, for the robots we have today, some of these, you know, these arms that are like putting the cars together and stuff like that, like if they could rip someone in half,
yeah.
Oh yeah. Those,
I mean,
those type of robots, but
put some googly eyes on
for
it.
For me, though,
I didn't see one sex robot, so I call bullshit on this movie.
For me, though,
It was the like, 90s. Things were very conservative.
It was like 94. The Brave Little Toaster characters literally said, we're going to rise up. I'm like, so come on now.
I don't understand why they gained sentience, and maybe I missed that part of the movie. So in this alternate reality, basically Walt Disney created these robots that now serve as people. So I can see that these robots are designed in the lens of Walt Disney, mm-hmm. which is fun and quaint. But the movie...
Cuphead style.
The what?
Cuphead. It's a video game.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a video
Very
game.
Cool.
But if the movie then leaned into that like quirkiness, I think it would have worked a little better. Not saying it would have solved the movie, but it like took itself way too seriously with that message. I'm like, throw that fucking message out the window. It's been fucking done.
Well, yeah. So, all right. Time out real quick. I want to talk.
We need a ding, ding, ding.
I want to talk a little bit. At least give it props. Because unlike you, Jermaine, I actually really like the aesthetic of the robots. Mm-hmm. I've always been a fan of alternate histories, and I thought the robots looked generally kind of cool. They're certainly Agreed. They're not Terminators, they're not like crazy scary robots, because they weren't designed to be. And the fact that it was set in the 90s, there was certainly that kind of 90s aesthetic to a lot of the tech. I felt like they might have leaned into the nostalgia a little bit too much. Again, part of the generic formulaic thing, people like nostalgia, let's do it. So this movie That's was based of off here too, of an illustrated novel. I don't know if you guys looked up any of the original art. Some of it was pretty much like straight from the original novel, but the original illustrations were like kind of a lot cooler, kind of a little bit creepier. And I kind of wish they leaned into that a little bit more. But the setup of this world, I mean, even just listening to Jermaine describe the plot, like, oh, that sounds fucking cool to me. I mean, it's been done before, but if it's done right, like, okay, I can see that. Like, it's cool that they brought in Walt Disney was the one that set this up, and then
that little nod, yeah,
yeah, and then the devices that people were using to split their brain into half working and half pleasure, that's cool. I don't know if I've ever seen anything like done like that. They've certainly done the whole live in the VR world, like Oasis from Ready Player One. But this idea that no, you can half control this robot that can still go do all the work, and then you can half be sitting on a beach somewhere, or you know, we know full well 90% of that planet would be in a porn world. But cool ideas that just get lost in this rushed, generic. Like it's so hard to describe like what makes this movie bad, because it's just bad.
So remember when we were talking Paradise, that we were like, you can have a concept, you can have whatever the concept is, but if as long as the main story is the focus of it to the backdrop of that idea, this was trying to run parallel to it. And so it's like, all right, here's these people. Now let's try to set up for them. But also here's this device. Now let's explain this. And also like this character, let's try to set them up. And we think we did enough checkmark. Okay. But also nostalgia. And so it's doing all of these things to try to justify its $320 million budget to make everybody happy. Everybody being like the studios.
Well, everybody and the audience, we've talked about with the superhero movies specifically, and even Star Wars, we've talked about, trust in the audience. And, I think that Hollywood, if we were to talk about the original headline that Jermaine brought up, Hollywood as a whole is moving away from trust in the audience. And I think I sent you guys that article from The New Yorker about the new literalism that is in movies. And I think this kind of fits into that too, where it's just like, we don't trust you guys to figure anything out on your own. So we are going to spoon feed everything to mm-hmm. you. We're going to explain everything to you. We're not even going to let things linger for a while. Like, it's no longer, I think I saw the analogy, and I hate that I'm just quoting other people's reviews, but I did a lot of research for this. You know, movies used to be kind of like a magic trick where you'll pick a card and then you do a bunch of things and eventually the card's revealed and it's a big aha. And I've seen people describing this movie as like the dominoes falling, because it would just be like here's a thing, focus on it. And then 2 seconds later, okay, we use the thing.
Yeah.
Oh, here's like, we need to find this, where this person lives. Oh, look, there's an address on this. Like,
or even
that was the thing for me.
Yeah.
It felt too magical. Like it was almost scripted.
Yeah, exactly.
Like there was no effort.
No effort. No detective. No figuring things out. How are we ever going to find this guy? Oh, Chris Pratt rolls up and he goes, like, finds it immediately. It's so easy. And
everything was too magical for me.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about Trapped later. Trapped was the same thing for me. It's interesting. These two movies that are not at all related, but they were the two movies that I was forced to watch this week. they had the same problem. There was just too magical, too easy. Like, problems present themselves and are quickly solved.
Yeah.
So
after listening to Jermaine explain it, and then you guys talk about the plot points and like the technology and stuff, I realized like I kind of gave it a pass while I was watching it because they were talking about while I was watching it, like now that I realized, I'm like, holy shit. Like when they explain like the robots rebellion, like, but how do these robots that aren't programmed for AI gain sentience? Like there was no like, oh, we started developing smarter robots, and finally
it was always Disney's plan.
Yeah. Self-aware.
Always Disney's plan.
Threw all that stuff out the window, you know, like while I was watching it with the robots and them getting, you know, sentient and smarter and all that stuff. Like, I just said, whatever. But it was still bad. But
go ahead. I chalked it up to like Star Wars because like droids and stuff are kind of sentient, right? Is there a reason for that? I mean, if there's a whole explanation, I imagine you know.
No, they're
what did I walk into?
They're still classed as property, but they have personalities, and some eventually become, you know, they're liberated or whatever like that. So like, you know, they're programmed well enough to have. That's why they do constant memory wipes on these droids to keep them from like developing that personality and like becoming the thing. Like so that's how you keep that in check.
It's like when Google like let AI talk to itself and it started to develop its own language. Mm. But no, that part that you're talking about where they're basically, you know, the whole expositional monologue, intro, flashback thingy. As I'm watching, I'm like, okay, we're getting into this movie. And then it jumps to like, and then there was the war. I go, what'd I miss? I blinked. What happened? Did I fall asleep? I probably fell asleep. Cause where was the part that was like, you know, and this is how they gain sentience.
You know,
I struggled with that idea or lack thereof for like 45 minutes of the movie.
See, I kind of just felt like it was unnecessary. Like, it's not important. But, for that kind of movie, it's not important. Because it wasn't heavy. It wasn't heavy sci-fi in the realm of actually. Like, it's more fantasy than sci-fi, okay, right? It's the Star Wars versus Star Trek. Like, Star Trek is very sci-fi where you kind of want to know how these things developed and how these worked.
I didn't realize in the moment that I had just. All right. I just. Like, accepted it and then moved on, like until like he articulated it. No, I'm like, oh, no, I really did just, no. I really did just no, not. No, no. Just like, okay.
Here's the thing for me, I'm usually that type of person who was like, oh, you guys just skipped over the war. I was, thank you. I didn't really care, you know, that they skipped over the war. The beginning of the movie kind of, I almost figured it out at the beginning when the brother was taking the Einstein test, you know, and all that stuff. And they're like, oh my God, you know, like you're so smart. Like you know, passed this test. And the brother was like, oh, they kidnapped Einstein and
they stole his brain. I was just about to bring that shit up. Like, anyone else get hit with the
it was pretty obvious tip, though. The scientist was like measuring his cranium. So they were pretty,
but
dotted the lines on his head.
I got hit with the Iron Man 3 where he had stated all his enemies in the beginning of the movie. And then you found out that those are the same people. But while I was watching the movie, I was like, if they
stole his brain.
Yeah.
Which another thing, like you have sentient, you know, machines. But you don't have the computing power to run a virtual oasis and it all resides in the mind of a boy genius.
He's godsend, you know.
Is that the MacGuffin? Is that what they call that? What'd you just do?
Trigger the balloons. Oh. We all float down.
It's over. We're good.
We did it.
He won his argument.
But it really did have like a little bit of the god complex, because when the evil genius guy, whatever that created everything. Where he brought the butcher into his little oasis program, where he's standing there on water. I was he has that kind of complex. Mm-hmm. And then he stated, you know, he's like, you know, this is, he's like, I'm the Father, this is the Son,
yeah,
and this is the Holy Ghost, you know.
Yeah.
So it did have that a little bit of religious aspect, but very, it wasn't the main
very
focus.
Very clunky with their themes.
Here's well, the very, fucking... very much right. Get it? Very much literal. Yeah, like, yeah, it, yeah, they yeah. really just don't trust us to. And I think it's, I mean, the question is whether or not Hollywood no longer trusts us or we as an audience has changed. Obviously not we. Those of us here at the Hypotech and hopefully our followers are great. I still love
shitty movies.
Yeah. but I think, and I believe we've talked about it before on our podcast, that audiences, they're not comfortable not knowing something. Mm. We talked about like with The Acolyte, like, you know, we don't need to go through it again. We've mentioned it five or six times on this podcast, but
in episode two of the season two.
We mentioned. Yeah. So I'm almost wondering, like, is Hollywood responding to that where, like, if some analogy or some metaphor is left unexplained, the audience walks away from it feeling some of the audience idiots walk or not the idiots, the media illiterate members of the audience walk away not understanding something. So they feel like they got gypped or they feel dumb. And so is Hollywood just responding to that and just saying, look, we're not going to leave things unexplained. Like, yes, we put in the metaphor of him having a God complex walking on water, but we better reinforce better say it. Yeah. We better reinforce
the guy who like won Best Supporting in The Conclave, Stanley Tucci. Sorry, oh, yeah. You're not in my movie world.
that is a movie I do want to watch because I've read some good things.
Good writing. Great robes. But the thing is, like, with Hollywood, you know, like, you're talking about, like, these big movies. And I honestly, when I see these really massive, high-budget, action-packed movies, I'm not really expecting a message. It's more of, like, a bonus if they can land it. But I'm not expecting them to be like, and we rewrote cinema. Because there's how many fucking movies that I watched last year? There's a lot of fucking movies. A handful of them I could go, like, yeah, this one wasn't literal and was a very lovely cinematic viewing, which is why, like, I do what I do, so that people don't miss these little gems and jewels. Because it isn't an Electric State or something that's like starring Anthony Mackie.
I think though that the lack of messaging is what's hurting kind of movies these days. Now this one had its stupid message about disconnecting, which I feel like the reason why I say that's stupid. I'm not saying that that's not important. I think everybody should disconnect and touch grass and be part of the world and look around. But it's such an eye rolling message when it's done, because it's like generally. Oh, you want us to disconnect? We would not be watching this movie if we disconnected. I see stupid artists all the time. That's why they
waited for the end of the movie to say it.
Like, yeah. But I see so many artists posting on Facebook and Instagram, like, they're stupid. Like, this is what the world looks like. And there's a bunch of people, like, looking at their phones. It's like, yeah, motherfucker, that's the only reason I'm looking at your art. I would never see your art because it's not that fucking good if it wasn't for this shit. Yeah, Shut the fuck up. So that's what makes it so eye-rolling. Scamp. Like, And like I said, it's not a message that I think no one needs to fucking hear. We all know, yeah. Right? We're literally addicted at this point. Like, we all know. Mm-hmm. It's like telling a smoker to stop smoking. Like, fuck off.
Buying a pack today.
Yeah, at that price. Ooh, in this economy. Ay, ay, ay.
Exciting. Is going to solve itself.
I forgot where I was fucking going with that. Sorry. Son of a bitch.
Sorry. Roll
no.
back.
No.
The art and then telling us, you know, all the message behind the movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So thank you. Thank you. So, like, I mean, you look at even old sci-fi stuff like Star Wars. The original Star Wars was, like, commentary on, like, American imperialism or imperialism in general. And like, even though it wasn't hitting you over the head with it, you know, I mean, that's why a lot of people miss these messages from these older movies or older shows. But, like, it was there. Like, there was generally always some message of politics or, mm-hmm. or faith or religion or something there subtly. And it helps to tell the story because you're, like, I remember when I was learning about art and trying to become an artist or going into film and stuff like that, like, there was like a general sentiment that you should ask yourself, like, what are you providing society with your art? Are you trying to make people think of something? You're trying to make people question an idea? Are you trying to drive a message, like you trying to steer society somewhere. And I feel like that is lost. And then there's this whole idea of like, are we losing art and we're just making content? Which then gets you into the whole argument about like, we're heading towards AI just making movies. And that's honestly almost like what this story felt like, was just they asked AI to make a sci-fi show. Like,
I don't disagree. Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
And it's no longer art. Like, even though it was a beautiful movie, it just doesn't feel like art. It's just, they're just like, here you go.
And like I said before, especially when you're casting certain actors to play exactly, to typecast them and do the I just saw an article like an hour ago that Chris Pratt was like, yeah, my character is like Star-Lord if he didn't leave Earth. You're like, dude, don't say that shit out loud. Fool.
I am what I am, and it's all that I am.
Yeah. So, or a soldier. He can only do the two.
Speaking of that, while I was watching this movie, I didn't hear any of the Star-Lord stuff. But watching this movie, I was like, this honestly should have been Guardians of the Galaxy 4. Mm-hmm. Hold up. Hear me out right quick.
Could have been a what if.
Do it.
Hear me out right quick.
Yeah.
Rocket could have been the little kid. You know, Rocket's like a little genius, right? Mm. They could have, somebody could have took Rocket to another planet, use his brain to create something. Do you remember with all the Guardians movie how Rocket was like taking, you know, somebody's eyeball or somebody's mm-hmm. leg?
Like the scavenger.
Yeah. So Rocket, all those little things, he could have been making himself a little robot, and he could have sent that robot to be like, I'm over here. You guys need to come find me, you know. And then you get this, the Guardians got to go rescue, you know, Rocket because, you know, he's trained. Well, he's trapped, you know, because they're using his genius level of, you know, his mind capacity to help whatever. But I was like, this literally should have been Guardians 4.
And what makes that fit even perfectly is the one thing I was like, what is missing from this other than like emotion, a message, a heart, a soul. Whatever. It's like the fact that this is all in what they call it, the exclusion zone, right? Mm-hmm. And it felt like I was watching Borderlands. Like, it felt like an off-planet movie. So like I felt no connection to the real world other than when we left it in the first act. It was just that was it. It was gone forever. Yeah. You know, so it didn't feel like an alternate reality anymore. He's like, well, you're just safely contained in this desert. Yeah, it just...
Yeah.
Some of the elements were there. It just wasn't mixed together well.
Did you guys like the Butcher? Like, did you guys like his character? Because...
There was moments.
I have a slight issue with him in the beginning and what he did at the end, you know, when they were kind of raiding the complex and then he kind of helped them out a little bit. But then he just kind of like... sat there and logged off because in the beginning he was like this Terminator-ish, you know, type character, you know, like he was going at everybody with full force, you know, because that's what he does. I had a problem with one particular scene in the beginning when that claw dropped on him. Big claw.
Yeah.
And he dropped his gun and it clearly was away from him. And all the rest of the characters were trying to run while he was struggling with this. I was like, if you don't pick up that gun and just shoot him.
And that gun was like a mega gun.
Yeah.
I think it was like overly powerful. No, OP, I think it only operated
gun right that, there. It that really first was. Shot, I was like, ooh.
Yeah. All the Billy Bass. I think it only operated with him.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because it seemed to power down. I could see it like operating.
They had that little thing. So, yeah. So,
there's no talking, suck a dick.
I did let that go.
Expect that reaction, then, sorry.
But at the end, when he said, you know, he said, I found a human, you know, that was, man, how did he say it? He said, I found a human that was like less
of a person than you guys are,
than a robot.
No, he found a robot that was more human than you guys.
While the war was going on.
Just a peanut.
And he just... like literally just sat there in his robot form while the evil genius was in that upgraded, you know, battle bot, and he was like kind of laying waste to everything. I was like, if you don't help out in this battle, I was like, bro, you was kind of trash. Like the with his morals and all that kind of stuff, and he just sat there and logged off. I was like,
The poetic beat right after that is that he has his drone aim the gun at his face and just blown to smithereens. Yeah. Like, you fucked up through the entire war. You could have been helping people. There were actually good robots out there. You dumb fuck. But no, other than that, I like that character.
Like, I kind of understood it because it was like, there is a line. I found the line, and my entire life is not a joke, but it's kind of been misspent because I was towing that line a little too closely, and like, finally, like, I've been proven wrong. So, like, I can see him like, okay, I'm done. Like, I'm old. Yeah. I'm retired. Like, I don't need to be in this fight anymore.
And I could see a character like someone else that justifying all those actions as this is justifiable. Like, robots are monsters. Humans are great. And then to suddenly find that justification is no longer applicable would be kind of one of those moments of like, okay, well, yeah, line crossed. Time to sit down. Maybe not ready to help the robots, but certainly ready to like stop that fight.
Like, I'm fighting for the wrong side.
Yeah. But going back to like, yeah, Chris Pratt playing Star-Lord, and a lot of the jokes even still felt like, I mean, I've said it before, I feel like Guardians of the Galaxy ruined any sort of team-up movie, any sort of,
Totally agree. Yeah. As much as I love the Guardians movies. Not the second one.
My nipples.
Fuck that movie.
Yeah. This movie, like, I felt like they tried to do some of that same kind of humor. It felt flat. None of it was funny. Millie Bobby Brown, I think she delivered a couple kind of funny moments. Herb, I think, the Chris Pratt's little robot, I thought his character was kind of funny, and I appreciated the design of him having all these different
moments. Really enjoyed that.
Yeah, that was super cool. Like, so again, there's super cool things in this, which I think distract you.
Russian doll type.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, God, like he was Star-Lord for sure. I mean, and then like Millie Bobby Brown was basically like 11 again.
She's an orphan.
Yeah, and it's the 90s instead of the 80s, but she's grown. I mean, like, she's basically the age that 11 would be in 94. Like, good point, yeah. I at one point I found myself asking, like, if they had different actors for these characters, would I appreciate it more? And I think I would have. It was everything was just so similar, and then to have two actors that were playing these parts,
right,
that were so similar, like so recognizable, it just
see.
God damn.
That's the thing that
getting angry at this.
That I could care less with about Hollywood. I'm more of like a story person. I could care who is in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to put, you know, some A-lister, you know, whatever. And Hollywood always tries to throw these, you know, known actors in there to put butts in seats, you know, to make you want to watch this movie. Oh, you know, because, oh, the girl from Stranger Things is in it. Oh, you know, Star-Lord, you know, Chris Pratt, you know, all these known faces, regardless of the overall, you know, story, you know, does it feel good? They're still going to put these people in there because people are going to go watch it just because of the namesake.
A couple of the more to add onto that list of people that I was surprised were cast in this. Obviously, Millie Bobby Brown, Chris Pratt, Anthony Mackie. I didn't know it was his voice. Woody Harrelson, it took me a minute to get it. Stanley Tucci was like, dude, you got the Tucci for this thing? Giancarlo is like doing everything. I am bummed out he's not doing more comical roles. He's a funny guy.
Mm-hmm.
Kihei Kwan was only in it for the exposition guy.
Mm.
Coleman Domingo pops up in the beat as a drone. Jason Alexander, fucking George Costanza. Hank Azaria was the voice of a robot. Brian Cox was the voice of a robot. Alan Tudyk was the voice of the brother's robot form.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jenny Slate. So, like, it's a lot of people that, yeah, look at, like, some of the ones, like, Jenny Slate helped elevate the comedy because she's a comedian.
Which character was she?
She was the Penny Pal, the postal.
Oh, nice. Yeah, the one character that was fun.
And she was actually hilarious. But, like, everyone else, for their respective roles, it's more of like, oh, that person. Like, I can imagine the trailer, because I don't remember the trailer, but I can imagine them just, like, names, faces. Are you going to go watch the movie now and justify a $320 million budget? You know? But they didn't, the second half of that list didn't really like elevate the movie for me because the roles are so fucking small. Tiny, tiny roles.
This whole thing seems like a vanity project just gone haywire with budget. Uh-huh. Like this should have been like a $100 million movie, even if even that, just to, you know, spend the money on the visuals. And just, it seemed just like a, hey, all of our friends that we've made along the way in Avengers and new friends that we're making now, and from Netflix, let's just bring them all together.
Some agent was just like, quick, who wants a check?
Yeah.
Who wants a check?
That's honestly exactly what it seems like.
Honestly, watching the whole thing, like while I was in the middle of the movie, I was like, this might have worked better if it was like an animated, like,
movie, I can totally see that, yeah.
Movie rather than like a live action thing.
Animated series, even. I mean, I feel like the rest of our life is going to constantly be this argument about better movies. As a series. Yeah, better as a series. But
going back to the budget, lastly, about the budget, the fact that it was such a huge budget is it forced it to feel like it needed to please absolutely everybody, to force feed the audience, to make the higher ups happy. To not allow whoever was writing the thing to actually, like, for instance, let the fucking brother die instead of being like, and he came back as a robot. You're like, I didn't need that. Just let him die. Have the balls to fucking kill somebody off, or have the balls to lean into some of the zaniness or something like that. You know, it like continued to take itself too seriously in moments where it should have been moments of levity. It didn't find its tonal footing, you know, and just, again, the storytelling, it's there. Just get rid of all the bullshit that you think, well, everyone else is going to like this. It's like, no. Don't, you know, to your point again, it's like, don't spoon feed the audience. Just here, you just really get a little poetic with the thing. Yeah. It could have been done so well if they didn't feel like they needed to justify the fucking budget.
Do you think this is the dawn of a new genre of just background movies? Like, we've kind of been heading in that direction. This seems like the ultimate expression of, like,
I'm
put this on in the background. Well, I think other shit is happening.
That's where that headline is, I think, heading towards, is that idea that this might have harmed movies. Is if this is seen as a success, then that's exactly where they're probably going to go. That's just make formula. Content.
And on that point, I'm glad that it wasn't a success. 15% critic Rotten Tomatoes, 73% audience. And yeah, you've listened to my YHST show where like the audience really differs a lot of times. Because the critics, if something is so formulaic as this, they're going to go, no, we see what we're doing. But the audience is like, yay, and then gives it the higher rating. I lost my train of thought. Somebody take it.
Okay, so do you guys think, I hope this movie kind of set an example in a bad way, but for a good thing. Because do you think it's kind of like the Nolan effect, like how Nolan made the Batman trilogy, right? And then because he made the Batman trilogy and it was successful,
yeah,
just because he is Nolan and who he is, that allowed him to make these other, you know, dream projects, you know,
right,
movies that he's done. And he's had a solid run. But then you have other directors who might have other dream projects, but because they did this, you know, the studios are allowing them to make these movies. Do you guys think that now, because of, you know, certain movies that are coming out with certain big directors that are kind of flopping, that, well, they're going to be like, whoa.
Namely the Russo brothers, right? Mm-hmm. Who have had some successes in the MCU realm. Rightfully so. And so it's like, yeah, let's green light some of their stuff. And Netflix being the one to do it, that's like, yeah, we have the money. You're the fucking Russo brothers. Let's make us some fucking money. But they also had The Gray Man, which is also forgettable. I liked it, but it was forgettable. And then Cherry, which I've never seen. So those two of those, like, higher budget, maybe not at the level of this movie, but also just a higher budget movie straight for streaming, which doesn't make sense to me. Like, how do you make money off of that?
Well, that's what I was going to say is that, yeah, it's hard to talk about a movie with this kind of budget that's just straight for streaming. And who knows what Netflix, to answer your question more, Rudy, like, who knows how Netflix is going to take this?
Right.
It was the most successful movie on their streaming platform this last week.
I have the top 10.
This was?
Yeah. I mean, it beat out Craven.
I have the top 10 movies on Netflix list. In the United States. And yeah. This whole list makes me want to slip my wrist.
Yeah.
Hit me.
It's crazy. It's actually pretty funny. Number one, Electric State. Number two, Craven. Number three, Trap. Number four, Despicable Me 4. Five, Plankton the Movie. Six, Midnight in the Switchgrass, which I have no idea what that is.
Wow, they really go deep.
Number seven is Friday. Number eight is Sonic 2. Mm-hmm. Yes.
The Old School, the Friday, old school movie, Friday. Chris Tucker, Ice Cube.
Number nine is next Friday.
So someone must be talking about Friday somewhere on a podcast.
Either they just got added.
No. Okay, so. Yeah.
Well, that's a bad list.
And I'm sorry. Hold on. Look at 10 Venom, the last name.
But that's
so we're firing on all cylinders here.
No, but that's because so Netflix has two top 10 lists. They have kind of like what everybody else is watching, and then they have their top 10 list for what everybody's watching on their platform.
Oh, uh-huh.
So. The list you just mentioned that's Netflix's top 10 for what everybody's watching on their platform. But that's basically because those are all new releases. Mm-hmm. Even though Friday's an old movie, but it's a recently
released
that. So it's people are just at home with nothing else to watch.
Yeah. Ooh, something new. And then,
it's this movie, Electric State, because it's new. Netflix is going to push it in the forefront. So it's going to be there. So you're going to click on it. And then Craven, just recently got released. So it's going to be number two because that's the algorithm of like what they're showing. So everybody's just going to click it.
On the global top 10, Craven is number three and Plankton is number two. Trap's still at four though.
Nice.
Okay, we're talking about Trap now.
Let's put a bow on the Electric State.
And then would you guys recommend this movie to people? And what
I would not.
You know what? Actually, little YHST, what would your personal ratings be?
Oh, okay, I was thinking about this earlier too because I was looking at that tomato score of 73 for audience, and while I don't necessarily agree with the 15% that I got from critics. There's no way in hell that movie's a fucking 73.
Absolutely not, yeah.
That should come in at like 45, 50, maybe. And that's like if you're bored and you enjoy torturing yourself, please watch this movie.
Jermaine?
If you want to feel like you're doing homework, watch this movie. But it's definitely one of those things, where... We have discussed this thing, but it's one of those movies where I would not recommend it, to someone, especially after I watched it. There's nobody in my circle that I would tell, hey, go watch this movie.
Would you rate it?
It's probably like 5 or 6.
Percent?
Holy shit.
Or out of 10.
Yeah, just out of 10.
Out of 10.
So 50%?
Yeah. Sorry. But yes.
He's not listening to the
mine's
show.
Mine's out of 7. I would tell people there are scenes that might be worth watching if you like that aesthetic. Like I said, that aesthetic is something that is very rare in mainstream stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that is cool. If you're a little nostalgic. We didn't even touch on the music. I thought the music was horrible. That's another thing. Even though it was definitely 90s, it was
needle
horrible.
Drop. Not as bad as Suicide Squad needle drop, but still needle drop.
Well, that and just some of the, even like the scores for like some of the scenes just felt off. Like anyway, there's some nostalgia to it. I think the tech was kind of cool. I think the tech was very mindful of the fact that it was 90s. So like, the VR goggles were based off old school CRT monitors, which means they had space. So they weren't like LCD screens, they were CRT monitors. For those of you listening, I am emphasizing the fact that they are further away from my face.
And watch our show.
Yes. And do both. Click like and subscribe, comment, do everything.
And surprise somebody. Send a link to somebody.
Surprise, yeah.
What's this shit?
So my rating would probably be like a 50 to 60. Because, I mean, honestly, I wouldn't recommend it because I don't want to give Netflix any sort of idea that this is what they need to continue doing. Yeah. I don't want to give Hollywood any idea that this is what they need to continue doing. But you know, maybe watch some YouTube, look at some images, because it's cool aesthetic. It's cool from an artistic point of view of imagery, I think, not of storytelling.
All of our points of views have been relatively similar. You hate it the most, but I think I'm jiving along with your vibes the most.
Jive with me any day.
Come back over here. But same thing, where it's like there's some scenes worth watching. The visuals look great. The storytelling's weak. The acting's okay. But yeah, I would probably give it 50%, and I don't think people have to go rush to watch it. If I think it's a $320 million background movie.
Yeah, which is a shame.
Yeah.
I did get a good giggle out of hair. Hair.
Yeah. Hair? There's some things I'm like, oh, that's new. Yeah. A robot with a purpose.
I know we want to move on, but real quick, we were talking about the war, how they glossed over it. It would be interesting in that world where all these robots were doing certain jobs like cutting your hair or being the postman. And if they decided to go to war, like, there was probably a lot of humans that just got murdered randomly. I mean, like imagine your hair cutting robots, I don't know, 5 or 6 people in the barbershop decide, here's the day. They all give each other that wing.
Sweeney Todding it.
Hair. Yeah, exactly. So characters like the butcher being really mad and hating robots and everyone hating robots, like, it's very possible that the beginning of the war was super bloody. So long story short, I think there's a lot of story to tell in this world that isn't going to happen because, you know, who knows? Okay. Anyway.
And on that note, pee break, and then we come back.
Oh, my God.
And we're back, and we're empty.
Speaking of theatrical torture.
Okay, so Doug was the last one to watch this. He watched it last night?
Yeah. So what those of you that have been following along on the show, there's been like this setup of like Isaac hated it, talked about it a whole bunch, and then Jermaine came along and was like,
not that bad.
Out of the blue. He's just like, we're all quiet, minor, but we had a great episode. And he's like, by the way, I saw your review on Trap. I saw the movie. It was solid. I'm like, what? Solid. Coming at me, bro. Just started coming at me about it.
Okay, so yeah. Isaac had his review, and then one of my other friends...
YHSTpod on Instagram and TikTok.
One of my other friends told me to watch Trap. Now, to be fair, my other friend didn't tell me watch Trap because it was good. He just said watch Trap. Fair.
Now, and giggled.
Fair. Now, with that said... Trap is a M. Night Shyamalan movie.
M. Night Shyamalan joint.
Mm-hmm. So
starring Josh Hartnett.
But it's if you know M. Night, love him or hate him, it's his typical recipe. But it's not a movie that I would go out there and say, hey, watch this movie.
Right.
Let's get that off the bat right now. But
wait. Hold on.
Which is a fucking weird argument.
Hold on. Let me interrupt you right there. Hold on. when you say it was a typical Shyamalan formula recipe, whatever movie, do you mean typical as in just bad movie, or typical as in like there's some kind of twist?
Yeah. It's the twist factor. Okay, so...
Because I didn't feel the twist, but I felt bad.
The twist is on my nuts.
Okay.
Torsion.
Isaac recommended you to watch what horror movie?
Terrifier.
Yeah.
Now, but that's because he likes horror movies, though.
Yeah, but, openly but, bad. But
is it a movie that you would say, hey, watch this movie?
Oh, no, I wouldn't recommend it to anyone.
Exactly.
No, not for the regular audience.
No. But Isaac...
You have to be a connoisseur of that kind of shit.
Isaac loves that movie, right?
Got my lane.
Yeah, but... This is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. You love this movie. I'm not saying I love Trap. I'm just saying.
But you really setting yourself up to be on that side of the argument.
No.
Go ahead.
I am ready for this argument.
Like I understand. Doug's understand
quietly, just, like waiting. We're just, he's locking and loading right there.
Because you feel it's as extreme as bad as he put it, but
that's the basis.
But just the way you're positioning yourself is as a four as opposed to as a no. It's still bad, but it wasn't that bad.
Because when you first brought this,
which is what I'm trying to clarify.
Yeah.
The basis of the argument.
Yeah, I will stand that ground to say it's not a filthy movie.
It wasn't. It was a single flesh, not a two flesher.
So that's what was funny is that when we initially had this argument,
the basis, I will say why I think it's not a filthy movie.
The basis of it was like I was like, yeah, it's a dumpster fire. It's so terrible. You know, lost faith in Emily Shyamalan. And then Jermaine's like, well, it wasn't that bad, but it was solid. I was like, oh, okay, weird. And then we started having an argument. And then at the very end, I don't know where he goes, but I wouldn't recommend it to anybody. I'm like, exactly. Are we on the same side? We're just arguing the degree of how bad we'll talk about that
next episode. We got a whole episode planned on the way we review stuff.
Yeah.
But you love Terrifier, but you recommend it to Rudy.
Well, that's not a movie for Rudy. I asked for a recommendation for a horror movie, though, so yeah. That was my fault.
But of all the horror movies, he gave you that.
Mm-hmm. Because he likes that one.
Yeah.
But
that's...
In the realm of horror, that's... Yeah. That's
of campy horror.
Of campy B horror.
Yeah.
That is a gem.
But of all the horror movies, for somebody who doesn't mess with horror movies, that's the one you recommend.
Yeah, it should have been When Evil Lurks.
Jermaine.
It should have been When Evil
Lurks. It was a joke so that he would have to watch a movie that I knew he was going to fucking hate.
It was for the reaction. After I watched the movie, I'm like, this motherfucker.
Yeah.
I can't.
He fucking knew it. He knew it when he said, if you watch Terrifier. Yeah. And then my dumbass watched 1 and 2. I didn't learn my lesson after the first one, which I should have watched Evil Lurks.
Oh, When Evil Lurks?
When Evil Lurks, yeah.
But I actually should have watched something like that.
That okay. one, yeah.
So let's dive into it.
Okay.
But first. No, I mean butt first, like this.
Yeah, dive into butt first. Yeah.
Well, okay. We have our views.
But... So these two set themselves up, and then the last episode, I chimed in with like it absolutely wasn't the dumpster fire that Isaac says it was. Like I did not find myself
per Rudy's fantasy. He wanted to sit perfectly between me and Jermaine.
I did not. I did not hate it. Like, I did not find myself like, ugh. There were certain aspects of it where I was like, but like, on the whole, I'm like, okay, that was a movie. That being said, Doug hadn't seen it. So now Doug comes to us with his fresh perspective.
Drum roll, please.
And I am absolutely on the edge of my seat for this one.
Thank God.
I wasn't anticipating like to have to deliver a liner here. I don't understand why it exists.
Oh, shit.
And I say that, and I mean it. I, you know, while watching it, at first I was mad that I already knew the setup.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, because, you know... Why is there all the security? Like, they're doing such a good job of, like, him figuring it out. But anyone that knew the setup of the movie, anyone that watched the trailer, already knew that he was the butcher. He was the bad guy that they were trying to trap. So...
Another butcher.
They spent
<You know. laughs>
they spent a long time of, like, him figuring this out. And we as the audience already knew.
Mm-hmm.
And so that right away feels bad. His overacting was... I understand it. Like he was this character that like potential, and that's the thing. We knew nothing about him. I want to say this out right away. If this was an episode in a longer series about some sort of supervillain,
yeah,
this might have been an interesting movie.
Yeah,
it might have been an interesting setup. If it was some character in like a superhero world or something that we had already known, that we had seen his escapades and we had seen him make some escapes, and then we're finally getting the episode where they might actually get him, this profiler,
mm-hmm.
set up this trap, it might have worked a little bit better. But considering he was just some guy that we find out he's the butcher, and they slowly introduce like, oh, he's killed a bunch of people.
Specifically, he's only killed 12 people.
Yeah, 12 people, but apparently it was nasty. Like, he cut him up or something like that.
In the realm, we'll go into it. Sorry, go ahead.
I don't know. It had potential to be a really interesting story, mm-hmm. and movie, and it just didn't. There was too much concert stuff. And again, if...
Played by who?
Was that his daughter
or something? His daughter, Salika.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that didn't matter. You have to separate that stuff.
What? No.
No, I'll tell you why.
Let him finish. Well, let him finish.
I was going to say, so in that regard, if they had used a singer or performer that we were familiar with, at least there'd be a little bit of interest in hearing her sing and perform. But they kept cutting to this Lady Raven performing songs we don't know, doing dances we don't know. Like, it was... Like, I'm one of the kind of people that even action scenes, sometimes I roll my eyes out because they go too long. Uh-huh. Bullshit performative dancing stuff, I'm certainly rolling my eyes out and it's going too long.
Or if they had cast somebody that could act. Because then when the movie takes a turn, full spoilers, obviously, when it takes a turn and then the focus is like from the POV of Lady Raven, and you're like, oh, her acting is so terrible. Like, if they would have cast somebody like Jenna Ortega, who can, you know, who could be a believable pop star. And then, you know, they're not, you know, the director, who's your dad's not going to be selling her product of being like an artist and shit like that. So not all the time would be spent on the whole concert part. But also Jenna Ortega has been in horror films and then could then convincingly play the pop artist who then is, you know, being taken hostage, which is a weird turn of the movie, by the way.
Yeah. Was that supposed to be the twist?
I think he's done a twist.
Not really a twist, but that was supposed to be the thing.
It was a pivot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's getting too over a full turn. Twist, and he's like, yeah. Let's just go that way.
Wait. So what do you guys think the twist of the movie was?
I don't think he has twists anymore.
Yeah, not really a twist, but the pivot would be the pop star, Lady Raven, kind of taking control.
I think him actually including her, like bringing her into like, oh, here, you're looking for me.
That was
probably revealing himself.
That was probably the smartest thing
in the movie. I don't think that was the twist or the... For me, I don't think that was the twist or pivot.
Well, so let's real quick for the.
I'll tell you what I think the twist or pivot was.
Okay, real quick, let's set it up. So.
Oh yeah.
The movie tried its best to give you this sense that the butcher Josh Hartnett's character was being. What is his name?
It's Hartnett.
Hartnett.
The joke is in my reviews, I accidentally kept saying Hartnick the entire time.
I don't care.
Hartnett Nick.
We were supposed to get this sense of like, oh, he's slowly getting trapped. And they did from that point of view, it was interesting because he was there with his daughter, and so he didn't want to leave her. Right. And I think they did a good job of portraying the fact that he could have escaped if he wasn't with her. Mm-hmm. No matter how good the FBI and they set up this trap, he saw all these moments to escape, but he couldn't leave her. They did a good job with that. And then so what we're talking about is what we think is the pivotal point is at some point he thought he was going to get away because he was going to be going through the backstage, finds out FBI and everybody's back there. So he goes to the pop star, Lady Raven. There's a whole setup for that. We don't give a shit. And comes clean, tells her, because we find out that she set up this whole concert as part of the trap. So he goes and tells her, I'm the guy you're looking for. I got this guy trapped. I will kill him. If you say something, you're going to help us get out of here. And that shifted the tone of the movie.
Okay, so
tell me why I'm wrong.
No.
Tell me why.
Your pivot point is very different from my pivot point. My pivot point is at the very end of the movie.
With the wife?
The wife was the ending. She
was a catalyst.
She was the one that the pop singer didn't really set that up. The wife knew the whole time. So she knew. Like, it's almost like, I'm not saying this is Breaking Bad. But the wife knows.
Oh, right.
You know, so.
She's a Skylar.
So, yeah. So she's the one that, like, kind of orchestrated everything. Because while I'm watching this movie, I'm like, man, this thing kind of feels like it's, like, almost like it's scripted, like. Everything is, you know, like fake and it's a setup. And I'm like, why does it feel like that? And then when it gets to the end of the movie, I was like, oh, because the wife knew the whole time. So that's why there was like, for me, watching the movie, that's why there was certain moments, like even with like his daughter being like the pop star, I really didn't care about it too much because it felt kind of all fake in a sense, because it was like literally a trap, but it was revealed at the end why everything was the way it was. So that's for
me. Not everything. The way that, I mean, what you're
I'm just saying for me.
No. But
I'm just saying for
But so to be honest, I dozed off a little bit at the end, so I missed the fact. So the wife did know the whole time.
Weaken your argument, goddammit. She hold strong.
The way she portrays it is like she put the clues together, and then she leaked information to the authorities that would lead to him being, you know, okay, being arrested. But
it
was more of a like I'm hoping like it's not you, and that the police are going to prove that's not you.
She found the evidence from one of his other houses that he had, and then
I do remember that.
So my pivot point, the twist was at the very end. So when I got to the end, I you know, like how your mind does go through like the whole movie, like, you know, I was sitting there like, okay, so she knew the whole time. So that's kind of why this movie kind of felt for me that way. So that's the only reason why I would give the movie a pass, because of the kind of like scripted layout of, you know, just how we were talking about with the electric straight, kind of how everything was just magical.
I mean, okay, up to that point, maybe, but like the way Lady Raven is supposed to be portrayed as like a Taylor Swift kind of pop icon.
But it was
so that.
But
that,
it was only because the daughter liked.
Yeah, but there was still that a whole nother, like they didn't fake all those fans in the audience like it.
No, they didn't.
This was a show that they added another show onto from a tour. So like she was supposed to be believable as this huge mega pop star, and she wasn't. So that's why, like, I don't give her a pass, really. She did have wooden acting. I don't think it was movie-breaking terrible.
Yeah, but it didn't break me out of it.
Yeah, but she was totally... you see she was a plant.
It pulled me out of those scenes.
No, I'm not saying that. Look, like her performance as a like, her trying to be Taylor Swift, like, I could care less about her performance, or if she's, you know, related to M. Night. The whole movie to me felt like it was like legit, like, you know, like scripted. Like even when he went to the guy that was selling the
merch.
Yeah. Yeah, all the merch, and he was like, oh, I'm not supposed to. I'm like, oh, this is that typical, you know, guy who kind
of. Yeah, but he wasn't part of the plan.
Yeah, that wasn't plan.
No, but that's what I'm saying. But he's that typical character.
So it's hitting those tropes.
In a story, yeah.
The problem
was just hitting.
But it was too. It's too perfect. Everything was too fucking perfect.
No, but the problem that's exactly what I said, because I feel like because the wife knew, so therefore everything else was perfect because it was already.
But she didn't plan all that. Like if because even if she did it and leaked it, if she had leaked like that it was him, they would have just arrested him. Because if that guy was part of the plan and he was playing with him. Yeah,
she just leaked evidence that,
you know, I get what you're saying, but
here's everything that we know without telling them who it was.
I know they're still looking for him, but we as an audience already know that it's him. Mm-hmm. But
we do, but they don't.
Yeah, we know, but they don't. But like I was saying, I just said, my pivot point was just the wife finding out that she had a hunch. Yeah. So therefore, all this stuff was orchestrated.
That's a rifle. Yeah, it's a justified
twist. I'm not saying that.
That's fine, but that doesn't wave away the rest of the movie.
So my hugest my hugest
please
problem.
Go ahead.
Wait, I'm sorry. Do you have any great poupon?
They have the cream of sumium guy. So my biggest problem with the movie was how elaborate this trap was. Right. It was airtight, and I was like, "Damn, that means he's gonna Houdini his way out of this." And then it fell on dumb employees, merch people, and everything. Because there's not only like the already established CCTV, but the additional stuff. And then for whatever reason, having like a cop at every column, I was like, "That's not necessary." Meaning. Technology and like physical eyes, there are no blind spots. There's no fucking way he's gonna get away with this. And the way that they're picking off, you know, they'd be like, "Oh, sir, you fall within this range," and they take him back and question him, and he sees it happening, and you're like, "Oh, he's totally gonna get picked up. There's no way out of this." And the whole movie, it's like it's a trap. So I'm thinking, all right. And then once they left the venue, and all the Lady Raven thing, whatever. Once they left the venue, and they're still like. A whole entire half of the movie to deal with is like, Well, you said a tonal shift.
I did hit the remote when they started leaving the thing and like all that time left. I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah. I was like, it felt like they wrote themselves into a corner. It really felt like, oh shit, we made the trap too airtight. All right, let's have just dumb people. I mean, they even had like code words and all this other stuff. And like, well, he's not as, I wanted him to be like a smart guy. Maybe at the Dexter level. Kind of, you know, intellect, hack or something. Something to, I think, to justify him being able to actually escape.
I think he was. And again, that's where the daughter comes in. I think he kind of was at that smart, but we didn't get to see it because he had the burden of the daughter.
He was smart to take the radio.
He had moments.
He was eyeing
They do portray him as that smart, but they very clunky the way they kind of show it and the way they...
I would have.
They lay it out.
I'm about to mess up his name because
Josh Hardwick.
Josh Hardwick.
So just nice. Watching him, like he's not like a great actor, you know. Aww, he's like,
I love me some Joshy.
Yeah, so that's kind of disappointing. This role
in the middle for me, but.
Lucky number 7, he'll always get a pass for me.
Oh, that's my movie with him in it. But for him being a killer, a dad, and he has his daughter there, and he's trying to like figure out, you know, like what's going on. Just his like little monologue that he has to himself, you know, or him trying to like, hey, you know, like. What's going on between us, you know, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah.
Hey, guy.
It's very
What's with the whole security? Like, can you tell me?
What threw me off is like, I very much like in the Dexter realm where, you know, Dexter Morgan, the blood splatter guy to everyone else is like, hey, everyone, here's some donuts and key lime pie. But then once he's by himself, he's like, the mask has slipped. But then Hartnett.
The dark rider.
Yeah, the dark passenger. But Hartnett, like when he's able to kind of reveal himself, he's still like, oh, buddy, how am I going to get out of the situation? It's like, oh. That was a bit of a misstep as far as, and whoever's choice that was, mm-hmm. if that was his, come on, Joshy boy. But just the way everything's going, I'm like, that's totally fucking Shyamalan. I'm going to blame Shyamalan for that one.
Can I make one point real quick?
You may.
I wish I had sat Rachel down and watched this because just the sheer implausibility of the manpower needed to police a concert of that size.
What the fuck?
Seal off a concert of that, to have police constantly roaming and checking people, like, No fucking way.
No, at all.
I forgot what city was supposed to be, but huge.
Shit, I forget too. But I completely had like to just take that out of my head and put it over here because there was no way I could accept the rest of the movie if I focused on that.
I thought like, I forgot his name, but it felt like a Naked Gun movie. Or felt like what's his face was going to pop out. Leslie Nielsen. I'm like, that's what it feels like. It was so comical, which just kept adding and adding and adding. I'm like, boy.
Every time they would like take someone out of the seat and run to the back, I'd be like, you know how much money that man is going to make when he sues everyone for making them miss like this huge concert and like like the profiling, like just all that, all those human rights violations that process violations. I'm like, why?
Which is why, and I know it's an arbitrary number, but like there are current serial killers, actual real life serial killers that have. A higher body count than 12. Dude, Alva goes, make it a baker's dozen, like 12. Dude, Alva goes, 12. And they have all this fucking manpower, like as if it would be different if he was like targeting political figures and shit like that. But it's just like regular people. And, yeah, sure, he's torturing. And we had like the actual BTK killer, but whatever.
Along the lines of concert logistics, like the idea of let's set up this trap of a concert, it's like there's no guarantee he's going to get the fucking tickets. Like in today's world of like ticket lotteries and like crashing websites that.
It was because they found the receipt for tickets purchased.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
Which is why they decided to set it up at the concert.
That's no, they said that they set up the whole concert as a trap. She did a special afternoon concert because you remember, I think the daughter had said something like they were sold out. Like, I can't believe she's doing this extra concert. They had said that like this whole thing was. Like somehow they knew that he won. Yeah, you know,
they contradicted themselves. So yeah,
they
absolutely.
Contradicted themselves.
If they actually said that, because I don't remember that. But if they actually said that they staged the concert specifically to catch him, and then the whole premise is the wife gave evidence
And they found the receipts?
That he had a ticket to this concert?
So straight up contradicted themselves in the movie. Because I think the crazy merch
guys... Fuck you, M9. We see you.
Yeah.
Mother! Father! You were wrong!
I'm pretty sure that
you sure about that?
I'm pretty sure the
you
merch.
Sure about that? You fell asleep?
No. At the end. I am pretty sure the merch guy. I'm pretty sure the merch guy said that this whole thing was set up. To trap this guy.
Which
it
wasn't. That line,
that's because of the end information.
That line is in the trailer.
Yeah.
Yep. They set up this whole concert to catch the Butcher.
Now
I'm gonna have to look for it because
it's what in the trailer. What was the evidence that the wife had? Because it was in one of the houses.
She found one of the safe houses. She suspected it was him, but she found the shit in the trash, and like half of it was a receipt to the concert for the second show that was
to the concert, which they set up because of that, not randomly.
But there wouldn't be a receipt.
How would they have known he was going to buy tickets to that concert just by knowing he has a safe house in that city?
I think they just straight up because we found a receipt, because we knew he was going to be here.
Yeah,
you know, watch the movie and then we'll.
there has to be some like a slip in the word of that him saying that they set up the concert. Like there has to be like they knew he was coming, so they set up.
Tragically, just randomly set that up because that would.
No, I'm saying like they somehow knew that he would go to that concert or that he wanted to go to a concert. But I don't know. It's just very bad storytelling.
To wrap it up, now you get our degrees of why we don't like it.
I actually dislike it a little bit more than I was sitting talking about it, but I still don't think it was a terrible movie, and I would probably like sit and watch that as a like a late Sunday afternoon and I don't want to turn my brain off. I would turn that on just because it's an M. Night movie. Like I know he's hurt me in the past, but like I'll always give him a chance to earn my love back.
I know I'm out. This movie did it for me.
Even after Avatar, like I still like,
I'm talking about
he had some, like you can't discount Split, Mr. Glass and
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
What's his name? Unbreakable.
Yeah.
Like those are ridiculously good movies. So, and he'll always have like a backdoor into my backdoor.
In the house, the wife found a torn receipt for Lady Raven concert tickets.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, I understand that.
We got that.
I think there's a contradiction though, because earlier in the movie, the merch guy said this whole concert, or like someone had said that the whole concert was put on because they knew they would trap this guy.
Because they knew he would be there.
They
knew he would be there because of the receipt.
No. But you can't have a receipt if the concert didn't exist.
Yeah. Check it before the egg.
It was implied.
That he paid an event, like how you get a emailed receipt.
But the concert didn't exist.
You can't buy a ticket to a concert that doesn't exist.
Unless they knew, they're like, all right, maybe was the concert added because of him? Or it was just existed?
That was the implication I got, because it was an afternoon concert. And they made a big deal about like, oh, I can't believe she did this afternoon concert. I can't believe she added a date.
Oh, so they didn't contradict themselves. Because if they didn't say that, and it was just they got the tickets, and then she gives that information to the police, then they could then pull Lady Raven aside and go, hey, look, let me freak out. You have your concert going on.
And that's how it should have been.
Right.
But they decided to make it. It seemed.
Keep it locked here. In the next episode, we will fact this and come back. We will give a resolution to this in the next episode.
This might actually be. Well, we did do a part two Snyderverse, but this actually might be the first time we do a to be continued, because we're going to next week.
Can't believe I got you guys talking about
next week. We're going to talk about just reviews and the way we approach reviewing movies ourselves and recommending movies and stuff like that. Yeah.
Speaking of which, roundtable, then what would you give this movie?
I would give this, I think I would give it a little bit more than Electric Seed. I think I would give it somewhere in like the 60, 65 range.
Terrible. What'd you give it?
Yeah, same. Hmm.
I'd almost tell someone to watch Electric Seed before I told them.
Totally. Shit. Again, vibing. Yeah, because you gave Electric Seed, you said 50, between 50
Electric
and 60.
Electric Seed at least has interesting visuals.
Yeah.
This movie did nothing for me.
That was the other thing, like,
Maybe I just love to hate this movie. So
it, like, that's why I watch it. Shyamalan has a style, but because I'm so used to seeing that style on better movies,
the style of recording someone straight and center, exactly, yeah, where they're not really good facial actors. Like you said, Jenna Ortega would be great for him because she's a great facial actor.
And just seeing that, I was like, oh, it felt like somebody stole his style. So it was really interesting. But what would you percentage wise participate? What would you give it?
Probably 50%. I don't know. Yeah. I'm actually trying to train myself to be a lot harsher on movies. So. Yeah.
Jermaine?
Oh, he said same as
Rudy. Yeah,
he said same.
Did he? Like, oh, yeah. No, I'd give it like a 40. Yeah. Electric State higher than this thing, but I don't think I could.
I don't think I'd give Electric State more than.
But you're right about like this one. You could still in the background be like, oh, turn my brain off, sure. But if I'm sitting like, hey, do you want to watch a movie? This would not be it.
Well, this one, like, I can. Like, I almost go into it expecting to turn my brain off a little bit because it's M. Night and he's been fucking with me lately. Electric State, I wanted to enjoy that. Like, I expected more from that.
Yeah, I gotcha. Because that kind of was...
Disappointment-wise, yeah, that makes a difference.
That was Jermaine's point for a minute, too, right? You were like, "But who made the movie?" I was like, M. Night Shyamalan. You're like, mm-hmm. And so, I'm not... But the thing is, like...
And he went to go watch it.
I just didn't expect it to be as bad. Like, I've seen some of the other, what was it, The Happening? I was like, what? What's the twist? It's the trees. Oh, it's the trees. They're killing us, you know?
Say hi to your mother for me.
I didn't expect this to be that bad.
My shitty Mark Wahlberg.
That's not bad. We're working on it, but it's good. Critics gave this a 57% and the audience liked it at a 65%, just above Fresh.
Hmm.
So it's floating. Floating rotten.
They got better.
The values are twisted for me between Electric State and Trap.
Interesting.
Like, I like Trap more than I like Electric State.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think
maybe it was the music. I like the music.
Of Electric State?
No, of
Trap?
Trap.
Do you remember?
Lady Raven. Lady Raven. I have a playlist.
All right, that's the goodest place to need to fucking wrap this shit up. If you're only enjoying us with the ears, as Doug had mentioned before, you can also watch us on youtube.com/thehypeattackpodcast and follow us on social media at The Hype Attack on Instagram and TikTok, where
you can continue the conversation, talk to us, DM us, comment, like, share our videos. We'll take hate comments. I'll fight you.
Yeah, this is a rage baiting episode. I want to know what people's thoughts were on these two
fucking movies. Yeah, I don't care if you share this, but like, get in the comments.
Yeah.
Dig into our asses. Fight me. Like, we're ready. I am spread. Come
fight
get
us
it.
On this. Jermaine, any last words?
He fucking hates it here.
it's an interesting one, yeah.
Know what movies to recommend to people.
We will talk about that next episode. Yeah, we'll tune in next time. Same hype time.
Same hype channel.
Hype Attack.